I went to London because, for me, it was the home of literature. I went there because of Dickens and Shakespeare. No, let's say Shakespeare and Dickens, to get them in the right order. Ben Okri. London, Michaelmas term lately over.
London?
Okay, you know where you are.
A radical transformation.
Very radical transformation.
People are morally outraged with what's going on.
I got very excited this week.
Seems reasonable, doesn't it?
As soon as you scratch the surface, you realise gore happened all across London. Every open square would have a gallery.
A place called the Kittle Hoosie. Saw ye Geordie's Grace riding on a goosey.
What the hell is that?
A man is tired of London. He's tired of
so
life.
So what was the first thing that caught your eye?
The South has an overstuffed walrus.
It's very important history.
A handwritten letter from Charles Dickens.
There's a piece of information we're missing here somewhere.
You snake through the city, immersing yourself in the sights, sounds,
and for the Jewish community, who came over in their tens of thousands from Russia, from Poland.
We are doing a modern take on Morris dancing.
When did he think the Second Coming was going to happen?
Yes, Boris. He wants to put an airport.
the tone with which Boris has announced that is fatigued.
Yes, the city is always changing. People frequently say to me, you know, won't it be wonderful when it's finished? And I say, no, it'll be dreadful. It'll mean it's dead.
Inform and entertain. That's what it's about.
London is a modern Babylon.
That's very true.
Can we have some of the detail here? Hello, it's Friday, March the 1st, 2013. I'm N. Quentin Wolfe, and this is Londonist Out Loud, a podcast of news, views, and curiosities from London, UK. As ever, you can download the show free on iTunes, hook up on Facebook at Londonist Out Loud, tweet me at Londonist Sound, or see pictures of our guests via Londonist Out Loud on Instagram. Well, as you know, I've been away for a couple of weeks. Thanks for holding the fort in my absence. A bit of correspondence to catch up on here, not least from Robin Winning over in Santa Rosa, California. Thanks for listening, Robin, and thanks also for your message asking, well, where we are. Well, you know, everybody needs a holiday, but we're back now and ready to serve up a menu of material in March. We've got some fascinating stuff around the railways in the coming weeks. We'll also be investigating a church that claims to be the oldest in London and what a history it's got. This week, we've got more sheep than you can shake a stick at. An email has come in from a regular listener, Matt Keane. He often writes in. It was in response to something that was being said by Nigel of Bermondsey all about litter. Well, he said Nigel shows remarkable restraint in dealing with other people's litter, my biggest non-violent hate. But he goes on to say, as for the metros on the tube, you'll remember we were asking whether or not they get recycled. Matt says, I did ask a while back. I'm a cyclist now. As far as I could make out, they all just go into the clear plastic sacks with anything else that's been left behind. I very much doubt that they're ever separated out for recycling, but I'd love to be proved wrong. Yeah, I'd love you to be proved wrong as well, Matt. I hope they get recycled. We're going to try and find out. Now, we'll be heading south of the river in just a moment. You've been signing up, though, for audible.co.uk, and you'll know that they've got a free digital audiobook waiting for you from their online library of over 60,000 digital audio books. All you've got to do is sign up for a 30-day free trial of the Audible service. You can listen to your audiobook on your iPod, iPad, iPhone, compatible phones, MP3 players. You can even burn it to a CD and listen to it in the car. Your free audiobook is yours to keep, whether you decide to cancel in your trial period or not. All you need to do to get that free audiobook is go to www.audible.co.uk/Londonist and click through. Well, there's a literary flavour to this week's interview, which saw me going down to New Cross to an old abandoned police station, or as it's now known, the Fleece Station. Well, hello, hello. I am in New Cross today on the border with Deptford, and some strange pre-interview discussions going on here have already included sheep. We're not allowed to talk about another animal that's featured so far. The far right seems to have cooked, and we might be reuniting lovers on today's interview. I'm really not sure what's going on. We're at the Flea Station, and this is a studio within an old, converted, beautiful brick police station, enormous police station. I've got got to say, with holding cells and so forth that have been transformed for the use of artists. Here with me, Gary Northfield, Lauren O'Farrell and Sarah McIntyre, in no particular order. Hi, guys.
Hello.
Hi.
We are here primarily as the guest of Lauren O'Farrell, and you are all about knitting. Can I just say, before we get on here, I am in love with your tagline on your website. You're all about knitting and stitching, and you've got a thing at the bottom there that says, keep calm and carry yarn. This is wonderful. This is the sort of place I should be. What are you, though? Who are you?
I do like a million different things. So I am an author. I write books about knitting, but I also write books about street art because I'm a street artist as well. I founded the first graffiti knitting collective in the UK. So I'm still doing that as Deadly Knitshade, but don't tell anyone that I'm Deadly Knitshade, otherwise I'll have to kill you, sadly.
Four people she's killed so far for saying that.
I might have misunderstood what we're doing here.
I also run, as a voluntary thing, a group called Stitch London, which started off as like three people knitting in a pub in Canary Wharf, and is now like one of the biggest craft communities in the UK. We still meet in central London every single week, and it's become multi-craft now, so you can bring along pretty much any craft you've got, and we kind of move around a little bit on different days in different places, but we make stuff as a community. It's really rather lovely.
Okay, there's plenty to unravel there later on. So, see what I did. I'm going to fit in, I think. Let's talk about the flea station first of all. Why is it called the flea station, Sarah?
Well, when we first started up, there was a bunch of us, there were three of us actually, just making comics about sheep, and it's in an old police station, so the flea station seemed to be the thing. And since Lauren knits and uses sheep mercilessly, that's a good name.
Hey. Do you want to say that in a different way?
No. No,
what I'm struck by, though, looking around here, certainly comics are plenty, not too much in the way of wool. There's a few tidy bundles over there, but I don't get the impression that this is wool central. What's happening?
You haven't seen the cupboard of doom downstairs. It's quite amazing. It's full of massive balls of wool and a few tropical spiders as well.
Yeah,
it's incredible.
Well. Oh, a telescope.
Yeah, I've got a telescope down there as well.
You got it at Deptford Market for a tenner.
Yeah. I can't even use it. I can't use it, man. It's got bits missing. That's a good, well-spent £10.
Yeah.
Gary, besides staring into half-formed telescopes, what's your role in things here?
Well, I write and draw children's comics. So I kind of got known for drawing Derek the Sheep for the Beano. I currently work on the Phoenix comic, this chap here. And I do a strip called Gary's Garden, which I appear in occasionally. It's all about funny little creatures in the garden.
Oh, okay. So I'm looking now at this, and we've got a fairly sparse garden scene, a few weeds and dandelions and so forth, and we've got what seems to be a butterfly, a bird of some kind, a little bee.
Yeah.
And are these are the main characters?
No, it kind of changes every week. I have something completely different. So this particular one is the monthly meeting of the Mimicry Club. So they're just having a little meeting. And nobody really understands what mimicry means. And the boss gets very angry. So a slow worm turns up, says, oh, is this Mimicry Club? And everyone goes, ah, snake, run for your lives, run for your lives. Goes, no, I'm not actually a snake, I'm a slow worm. Well, you look like a snake to me. Like, can I join then? No, snakes allowed.
Well, as you can hear, listener, this is going to be a dour and ill-humoured episode, if ever there was one. Let's return to wool for a moment, and we've got Stitch London, Stitch New York as well, but let's obviously, we know what the show's about, let's focus on London for the time being. The book Stitch London that I can see has some bobbies on the beat, all stitched from wool, I presume. Yep. How does this work? What are you doing with wool? What is this? Because you formed this first ever guerrilla knitting collective. What does that mean?
Yeah, so they're totally two different things, weirdly. One is the Stitch London book. You can basically knit little bits of London, so you can make your own Big Ben, Tower Bridge, etc. But you can also make cool stuff like, not that I know where it is, but my scarf is basically in the colours of the tube, and it's knitted in a tube, and it's got a little oyster pocket.
Oh, right, here it is.
So it was hell actually to try and find colours that match the tube lines.
Think Doctor Who.
But see, oyster pocket, useful. So it's like a collection of useful stuff, but also just crazy stuff to do with London. And it's the most London-y knitting book in the whole world, basically.
Are you producing and selling this stuff, or is this so that other people can follow your path?
It's so other people can follow my patterns, and the stuff that I actually produce is street art. So I make street art in London, and occasionally do commissions for people like the Natural History Museum over there. See the orange thing? That's a giant squid that I made for the Natural History Museum out of carrier bags. His name is Plarchy. He's actually on Twitter. He's got his own Twitter account. But he was like a commission. So I do the two different things, really. He's life-sized version of Archie, who's the giant squid in the spirit collection of the Natural History Museum. So get to do cool stuff.
And I'm presuming made out of carrier bags to say something about the environmental consequences of mistreating the sea.
To be perfectly honest, made out of carrier bags because it's really cheap.
You're kidding.
If you have to knit an 8-metre giant squid, it's going to cost a lot in wool. And actually, yes, partly because of the recycling thing. But it's got that kind of sea life texture to it when you turn plastic bags into yarn too.
There was a wonderful thing there. Have you seen the film Love Actually?
Yes.
And there's a moment there where she's talking about knitting an octopus, I think, and she says, 8 is a lot of arms, David.
Ah.
And that, it's you. It's,
it is.
Yeah.
It is, except that squid have 10 arms, which I found out to my horror when I got up to the 8th.
Oh, no.
Okay, we can see on the Knit the City book there, a whodunit set in London. And I'm not sure whether now I'm lacking in confidence to say whether this is tied in, boom, boom, with your other projects. We can see on the front there clearly Charles Darwin, a statue there of wrapped in a giant squid. We've got Eros. I'm not sure what's going on there, but I suspect he might be wearing a pair of pants or a hat or something.
He has a string of hearts attached to his bow, which we did in situ in Piccadilly Circus in front of a whole load of tourists. I had a very big stick on me that day.
Biggest stick in the world. And she experimented with a stick here at the police station. you were trying to like get stuff from downstairs with it. It was amazing. It's like 50 feet long or something.
I was there when Lauren put that up on the Eros. There was such a cheer when it went up because it took ages. She had this really long telescopic pole that was like, waving in the wind. And it wasn't quite getting on. And it got, she turned around. She didn't realise. She had like 100 people watching it. It was like really amazing.
And what is all this in aid of? Why are you attaching wool to statues?
It's street art. So like any other street artist, I'm kind of making my art. I get to make my art at home where it's cozy and I have cups of tea and biscuits. But yeah, it's kind of to inspire people to take the city and do what they want with it rather than just wander through it aimlessly. So that's the idea. So I'm in a little collective, which is myself and The Fastener, called Knit the City. We've been making street art since 2009 in London. So yeah, look out for unexpected yarn.
The key difference, it seems to me, between yourself and what you're doing and other street artists is that it might be easier to remove it. This looks like a temporary thing rather than the graffiti sprayed on a wall, for example, which is more permanent.
And the idea behind our stuff is to make it as cute as possible so people want to take it home. So, for example, we did like something where we had like a load of mushrooms, magic mushrooms, kind of like peering up in Elephant and Castle, and a guy went past and we were watching. We don't normally watch, we normally run away, but on that particular day we were a bit curious, and he was hanging around, so we told him to take one, and he took it off to give to his daughter, who he had been kind of estranged from, and he said that he was basically getting her a present that no one else could get her. And I thought, that's rather lovely, really. So it's removable, which means that if we do get stopped by the police, and in the case of, if you can see the Parliament Square phone box, that's like our most iconic piece. When the police came up to talk to us about it, they actually let us continue making street art in Parliament Square, would you believe, under the gaze of all those CCTV cameras, because we said we'd take it down afterwards. So we got a police notice that says, seen decorating a phone box in Parliament Square. But one of them actually took a picture on his phone to show his wife when he got home. So our street art is a little bit more lovable, I guess, than stuff that people have to scrape off of building sides.
Right, yes, it seems this is a missing link almost in between, on the one end, sort of hard and fast, and you can't take it away, graffiti, which is, some people don't find it particularly welcome, and maybe some of those kind of book-sharing schemes where people leave things that they want to share around. I can't help noticing, Sarah, that you are looking at sheep.
Oh. This is my book, actually, Vernon Lettuce. It was just, we were talking about sheep and how we got involved, and this was the comic I was working on when we got to the police station.
I should describe, actually, Sarah's taken a Jack and Ori-style pose here. In a grandmother's type chair, crossed her legs, opened the book.
Anyway, it's about a sheep named Vern and his friend Lettuce, and it's inspired by Peckham, actually, because it's set in a sort of alternative parallel universe called Pickle Rye and Pickle Rye Park, and Vern is a park ranger in Pickle Rye Park, and he's got an obsession with moles, and he goes around trying to get the moles out because he's the park keeper, and the moles are little anarchists and run wild and destroy, basically, Peckham Rye Park.
Is there a sort of message underpinning the adventures of these guys?
Well, I don't know. I mean, it starts out about the moles, but then they end up watching this television show, this celebrity talent show, and they really want to do it, but they don't actually have time to go get talents. So they just like go think they can do it on force of personality alone. And they get to the show and everything goes wrong colossally, but they end up saving London. So it's quite impressive.
And there's a whole lot of London in, like, where's the page where basically there's bunny rabbits sliding down the bit in between two escalators that you really want to slide down.
Oh yeah,
but it's always got that those little barrier things all the way up it. But
here we go.
Because I always thought, you know how they always put the barriers and you can't slide down the tube. I thought this is like my parallel London. So this is like London as I want it to be, with animals and slidey. Escalator things. But actually, I noticed that Skyfall had it as well, but I did it first.
Yeah, I did it before Skyfall.
Did they do it with rabbits as well?
They didn't. They had Daniel Craig sliding down the tube.
More or less the same thing, isn't it?
So you think Daniel Craig read your book then?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Mm-hmm. He's a big fan.
Now, I should mention that we're in a reasonably compact space. I think that would be a fair description. This is a three-person office and it's not a four-person office. So you're working in close proximity with each other. I know that a relationship has existed between two of you. Let's leave it hanging and let people work out if they could. Quite clearly, the sort of infectious, fun attitude that you've got to work with is necessary for your art. What do you do if you come in a stinker of a mood? How does this work?
Because I every month I do a strip for National Geographic Kids, and I have to...
No, again, you want to phrase that differently.
No, it literally is. I do. I'm never in there, but every month I do send that picture. So I do know. Okay, I do a comic strip for National Geographic Kids, and it's I have to do something historical. I have to write something, the life history about Queen Victoria or Henry VIII. But I get really grumpy because it's such a hard thing to kind of compress like someone's whole life into like 9 panels. And on the day I have to write the script, everybody has to shut up. Basically, no talking, no laughing, and I'm really stressed out.
So. Is this true?
Yeah. But yeah. I think I come in here and fight with my knitting machine, cry into big piles of yarn, and Sarah, there's lots of paint flying and yeah, all sorts. So I think we all have our like days. But at the same time, it's kind of lovely to have this space where you've got other artists not doing what you're doing, which is always really nice. I mean, the difference between Sarah and Gary's stuff is phenomenal, actually. Yeah, that you can just...
It wasn't until I started copying Gary. Gary thinks I draw like him, but I actually, there was one page in the last book where I had to draw this dinosaur, and it just looked terrible. It was a bad dinosaur, so I gave Gary this post-it note and said, Gary, draw me a dinosaur. In like 2 seconds, he drew this perfect dinosaur. So actually, it looks exactly like his Derek the Sheep, but it's Derek the Dinosaur, and it's in my book. But I painted it. It just kind of looks very much like Derek, that's all.
Now, how did you... Because this seems like a marriage, in a way. This is a close partnership between... You've got to get... You get through the highs, you get through the lows.
Yes.
Has it always been the three of you? How long does this go back? Who else has been involved? How does it work?
Well, originally, there was me, Sarah, and another children's book artist called Vivian Schwartz.
The fact that you give her a surname, that makes her sound slightly intimidating. I don't know why.
No, she's lovely, actually. She's very nice.
She is amazingly talented and intimidating because she's like shortlisted for the Greenaway Prize several years in a row. And she's insanely gifted.
So, yeah, we actually... discussed how horrible our lives were because we were freelance at the time, and we were sort of saying, oh, it's really boring. You get out of bed, you go into your front room, you do some work, and you know, and you end up talking to yourself. And we're saying, oh, it'd be lovely to get a studio. So the three of us started discussing this on Twitter, and then we said, let's get a studio together. And then I think it was a friend of Sarah's on Twitter said, oh, I know somewhere that's going. And so within about a month, we was in here, weren't we, after discussing it on Twitter. But then about 8 months later, I think, Vivian moved on. And by that time, I was seeing Lauren. And Lauren was looking for a space because she had quite a lot of woolen. She had a lot of work going on, needed an office space, so she moved in. Yeah.
And Ellen as well. We had Ellen from New York. She was here in the meantime. There used to be four of us in here, but that was so packed.
Yeah.
So when it was all four of us, it was like a big social hour, but it wasn't really...
You couldn't get any work done with just four of us because we were just making jokes. Well, I was.
Scary. Everyone else was just staring solemnly at him.
Right, so let me make sure I've pathologised this correctly. Vivian had to leave because you were just cracking jokes all the time, essentially.
And then
you got your girlfriend in.
Yeah, exactly. Worked perfectly well.
Poor Vivian Schultz.
She still loves us.
Yeah. Now, I need to get my head, Lauren, around the figures here. You started off with seven people. Now, is this the graffiti side of things?
The graffiti knitting side of things, the kind of numbers fluctuate. So I think there were six to begin with, went up to seven, now down to two.
Now, see, you say fluctuate. Plummet would be another word.
Yes, it would be. Well, we killed the others off.
We're still in the cells. Downstairs. That's where we keep our clients when they don't pay.
It kind of takes a long time and a lot of effort to make what we make. And I think a few people got a bit disillusioned with the fact that, you know, you're making something and just giving it away. Whereas myself and the fastener, who I work with, we actually do commissions and stuff. And it's like a job for us. Half job, half sneaky running away. So it's the numbers didn't work.
Like a bad builder, isn't it?
Yeah, kind of. Yeah, with no response. They're not child safe, these pieces that we leave on the streets. So, yeah, if we pay guys out, at least no one knows it's us, really. It's fine.
Is there anyone else in town doing what you're doing, Lauren?
Now, yeah, absolutely. Loads of little kind of graffiti knitting groups have popped up all over the place now, which is lovely, and it's also really surprising because, I mean... It's happening all the way around the UK as well. I was in Cambridge the other day and I walked past a tiny little knitted heart hanging from a door, tweeted the picture and found the person who was responsible for it, which is really nice. But when I started it off, like in 2009, no one else was doing it. And they were doing it in the US, but only making cozies for things. So they were just literally the novelty of putting knitting on something. Whereas we started doing something which I call a stitch story, where we're actually putting a theme. So we're using characters. So we did like one, Oranges and Lemons. The churches from the Oranges and Lemons nursery rhyme, they still exist in London. So we made an installation at each site, and we basically in one day went around every single site and put an installation at that church in the order of the nursery rhyme, and we tweeted every single one. So first live graffiti knit on Twitter too.
Wow, that's a lot of niche areas. Although not so niche. I mean, what's going on? Did you catch a wave as far as the sort of knitting revival goes or something?
I think so. With the Stitch London group, there were three people to begin with, like at the little community where we meet up and knit every week. There's now 12,500 on our mailing list. So I think I just caught it at the point when craft is absolutely huge now. Mm. There's a huge number of groups popping up all over London, which is amazing. But back in the day, like, hardly anyone was doing it. And I'd knit on the tube and people would be fascinated. They'd all be watching. Whereas now they kind of see it more often. So it's really good. I love it. I love the fact that craft is basically taking over London. In fact, I call Stitch London the Woolly Godzilla because it's just like smashing its way across the city in a cuddly way.
Comic books. Now, okay, I need to get my terminology right from the get-go. Graphic novels or comics or comic books?
Oh, it's all the same thing. Comics is what we generally call it, but sometimes they like to call it graphic novels to make it sound more posh.
Yeah, more serious and more kind of accepted by society. They use the word graphic novels, but I'm just not going to plug it, obviously. But I have this lovely new children's...
Called Teeny Tiny Saurus.
Teeny Tiny Saurus. Yeah, so it's difficult to know how to sort of classify comics and graphic novels. generally people are starting to say graphic novel, but when it comes to, say, like children's books, a bit like my Teeny Tinosaurs, which I have here in my hand, it's like a select, it's like seven stories in there about dinosaurs for, aimed at kids, but I wouldn't call it graphic novels because people do perceive it as like Batman stories and like hard-boiled stories. And this is like fun, silly stuff for kids. So I would just call it a book of comics. It's really hard. We were trying to talk about it yesterday. What do we call it?
Oh, it could be a picture book, but it's a picture book with speech bubbles.
I would hate to call it a picture book. Yeah. I really would.
Let's talk about the comic scene in London more generally. Mm. And it's something I know nothing about. I don't even know what the route into this would be, except to ask, you know, what the landscape looks like, so.
Well, there's just loads of people making little books in their homes, you know, basically coming out of books, producing it on their printer, stapling them and bringing it to a comics fair and selling them, swapping them with other people. There's a Comiquette, which is a big fair, and there's one up in Leeds and called Thought Bubble, and there's just happening all over the country, but I think London's really a big hub of comics community.
Now you say that, I do remember having been to a comic convention for producers, and it struck me as being a really sort of cottage industry type affair on the whole.
Yeah, I mean, you kind of have always had the Comic-Cons with, you know, the old superhero stuff. But I think there's a new revival of kind of people coming out who have other stories to tell, not superhero comics just so much. And it's a lot more actually joining with craft. So you get people who knit and make collage and other things coming and adding a whole new dimension to comics. And it's really beautiful because you just get new stories, new ways of telling it, new ways of thinking about comics. And you could also call them artist books. There's very big crossover there.
Something that comes across in more conventional types of literature, of course, is that the author finds themselves writing about themselves and the autobiographical details slip in. Does the same thing obtain with comics?
Yeah, I mean, you get a lot of autobio comics, but I think it also you're pulling from the zine crowd. There's a big zine crowd as well that was different than comics.
People what's the difference there?
Well, it's kind of people writing stories about their life, about London, but it tended to be less pictures. I don't know, it was more writing, and it tends to be more political sometimes.
Was that the kind of zine scene from what's like 70s and 80s,
you mean? Yeah, and that you still see that crossing over with comics and craft, and there's a lot of mixing in a good way. I think it's kind of lightened up some of the zines.
Well, I was gonna say there are a lot of kind of self-published comics these days. They do tend to be autobiographical comics. I see, you know, a hell of a lot of them actually, but they're just really beautifully produced, and they're so idiosyncratic, each story, so it's lovely to see actually.
Let's nail it down. What is the difference between a zine and a comic?
I would say comic literally is you're dealing with the kind of picture box narrative, whereas a zine can be anything. You just like articles and collages and just whatever you want to throw at it.
But it's so fun to get like a little look into people's lives. You know, you get people all over London who have completely different stories, and they're all telling them with pictures and interwoven. So you really get a sense of it. You know, if you're reading a novel, a lot of time you're putting what you have in your mind on the novel and filling out the pictures. Whereas in a comic, you actually get to learn things from the pictures about somebody else's life. You know, they're showing you instead of you having to make it up, which is great. You get to be in a whole new world.
Well, there's a clear link there between what we've been talking about and something that you found, I think, which gave you an insight into the stories of two people presumably communicating with each other.
Yeah, we were in Deptford Market and we were just kind of having a rummage and a ramble, and I come across this box.
Having a
rummage. I was getting ready for one of my National Geographic photos. And I come across this box. It was just full of these really old love letters. I thought, oh my God. And I said to the lady, how much are these? Goes, £1 for one, and gives us £20 for the old box. And I only had like a fiver on me. So I run up to Lauren and Sarah, said, you'll give me £20 or whatever it was. And we just look at this box. And they were like, oh my God, we have to buy the whole box. And it was just these beautifully preserved old letters between this guy who was in, I think, the RAF and his girlfriend who lived in Deptford, talking about his boils mainly. But they were really, it's just so much stuff. We couldn't believe we had this big box of these photos, everything. So we you can really build up a whole life about these two people. So we're thinking maybe one day, probably not in a sort of too distant future past, I don't know which one go, but we will do like projects on it, definitely, based on all our different kind of angles of art.
It was an amazing find. I mean, it's basically a box full of someone's life in the middle of, I mean, Deptford Market we love to bits because you can find anything there. I bought a load of billiard balls for £2.50 once. I don't know what I'm going to do with them, but yeah, you literally can find anything. Boxes of wigs, like old watches. It is utterly bizarre, and it's just so great to have like a rummage through. But when we found that box, we kind of felt like responsible for keeping it all together, because if they were selling they're selling off people's memories basically for a quid each. So I don't know what we'll do with it, but there were photos, there's all sorts of stuff in there.
Like it's Jeffrey and Julia, and Julia has kept like tiny, like 2-inch big diaries of every single time she's written to Jeffrey over in Kenya or Tanzania, wherever he is. And it's so she's checked off, you know, wrote to Jeffrey today and then got a letter from Jeffrey.
what are the dates on these?
It was during the war.
Yeah, so it's starting from about 41, I think, 39, 41, yeah, into 46, 47, they got married.
And have you done the research to find out if these guys are still around?
No, actually, I'm guessing because with Debt for Market, you get a lot of house clearances from when people died, so I'm assuming they've died. No, we haven't. That's a good point. Yeah. We should look into that.
But there's a picture, and one of the pictures is an older couple, and we think we've pinned it down to them. We think it is them.
Because she's got quite distinctive eyebrows, isn't she? She had massive.
That's a gift to an artist, surely.
Yeah, absolutely, yeah. Yeah.
Deptford has come in for some stick on the BBC, generally speaking, hasn't it? With the exception of, notable exception of Lewisham A&E, actually there's been some sort of quite positive developments culturally speaking around here.
Yeah, we were really surprised to see it was on Channel 2, I think, and there was this documentary about Deptford, and it made it look like it was this really dead, kind of dying place that used to have a thriving high street, but it's all been boarded up and sad, and it couldn't actually be further from the truth, because you have all the art students around here, you have massive kind of multicultural community, mm-hmm. The market is so thriving, and just there's new shops and cafes and galleries popping up everywhere, and we even have our own library. We've got a new library, like, everyone in the whole country is losing their library. Well, not everyone, but lots of libraries are being shut down. And we've got a new one, and it's gold.
What?
It's made of gold.
So you've got all the funding for...
I think when I first came to the studio, I literally didn't know this area at all. And I lived out in Surrey, so I wasn't used to like Deptford New Cross. And I was a bit terrified, like, when I first came. It's got a very bad reputation, obviously. And over the time that I've been in the police station, I have totally fallen in love with this area. There's so much going on here. And, like, they've got the Deptford X, like, exhibitions where there's just, like, loads of art going on, street art going on. I did some graffiti in Deptford Market, actually, and it's one of the only places where my stuff has stayed up for, like, at least 2 weeks because they looked after it. It's the community side of Deptford is really lovely. It's so nice to be a part of, but I still worry about going home late at night from the studio. Because
even though you're working next to a police station,
yes, well, especially.
I did actually get mugged like once up there, so yeah. You have to be very careful. Twice.
I've never had any problems, to be honest, but I'm really tall, so I don't think they mess with me. Gary's like a hobbit.
Well, I used to live on New Cross Road, and when I moved out, I found out it was I was on the part of which was called the murder half mile, so I was glad to move out of there. That was pretty grim. That was the grimmest place I've ever lived.
I can't help noticing you said, Lauren, that you feel a lot calmer now. You have actually threatened death or imprisonment 3 times during this interview.
She does.
Well, my graffiti knitting name is Deadly Knitshade, so that side kind of tends to come out every now and again. I'm not apologising for it.
I think we have like video game lives here. She's killed us like 10, 15 times, but we come back because we've been saving up points.
Actually, now I think about it, Gary, you're claiming to be an opener of libraries.
That's correct, yes.
What do you mean?
I've been invited by South Wales Council to open one of their new libraries.
Because they thought what we need is somebody from Penge.
Yeah, Penge. Penge is the place to be.
Why are you? I didn't mean to sound so astonished.
No, I have got a little bit of history of a lady who runs a children's library in Newport in South Wales. Big fan of my Derek the Sheep character from The Beano. And so is the lady who runs all the libraries in South Wales. And so she specifically asked for me to come. And I've done lots of workshops for them. And they said, can we get Gary to open this library? So I'm hoping for the big scissors and the ribbon and everything.
You'll get it.
And the speech and things. So, yeah.
It's kind of what we do. I mean, we're children's book authors. So that's we get invited around to sort of dress up and be the Kate Middletons of England. And just, we bless things and
cut
ribbons and do the job.
So it sounds as though you bless things.
Yeah, I do the exorcisms.
I don't bless anything, so I'm, yeah.
You bless London with your art.
I do.
There's some cheese going on. What should we talk about in terms of things coming up? Because there's clearly a degree of not revealing exactly what's going to happen. Otherwise, the running away will be even more necessary. But what have you got coming up other than that? I know that the sort of publication clearly is part of your life.
Yeah, so, Stitch New York literally just came out, so it's my like New York-y version of the London book, basically. You can knit like Woody Allen and the Empire State Building and things like that. And a taxi that rolls along. Very exciting.
Oh, and Holly Golightly.
Yes, very cute. She is. She's all sparkly. But in terms of street art, there are going to be some very interesting things coming up. But I literally can't tell you. But one might
I
be...
I can tell you. For a fiver, I can tell you.
But, one might be on wheels, so... There you go, that's as much as I'm going to say.
And are you even-handed in how you distribute your art around London?
No, do you know what, actually, I tend to choose the areas that are going to have the best background, so hence Big Ben being in the background. I think we can get away with a lot more than like people who do street art with spray cans can, because we can take it away, but that means that I'm quite happy to march into the middle of Piccadilly Circus and do something, because I'll go, I can take it down, Governor. It's a lovely place to do street art in, like smack bang in the middle of the city. I tend to avoid like Shoreditch, Hoxton, where everyone else is doing the street art there. I kind of want to do something there with the cool kids.
Who is exciting you in terms of street art at the moment?
I still, like, every time Invader comes back to London and does more mosaics, I have his proper street art crush, Invader. Like, he does stuff in Paris, but he came back last year and did like bigger mosaics of his Space Invaders, so they're always quite amazing. But actually it's the people who I have no idea what their names are, and stuff just pops up. This morning on the overground I saw just random words like along the overground line from Crystal Palace, and the colours were really nice, and I was thinking, oh, someone's actually had a think about that. Normally it's a bit messy and but it was lovely. So I love finding street art that someone's actually put a bit of thought into. And there's a lot of that in London. There's so much street art. I think I'm starting to notice it more and more, maybe because I am a street artist, but also because I think people are getting a little bit sick of businesses being able to do stuff and no one else having a voice. So,
Well, there's this amazing story fairly recently of one of the Banksy's that was put up around the time of the Queen's
Turnpike
Jubilee.
Lane. The Turnpike Lane one.
Turnpike Lane, yeah. And it disappeared from the wall, and it's just popped up in an auction house in the US. Mm. Sold for how much?
Yeah. I don't know how much it was. Yeah, no idea how much it sold for, but they are. I was reading about it online, and someone said, it would have been nice if he'd done it on a public building so that people could keep it. So obviously the person whose wall it was has sold it off for lots of money. But I it's so nice that London is proud of its Banksy's. You know, it gives us street artists a bit of hope.
Yes, that really is blessing a building to put a Banksy on there. What about you, Sarah? What's coming up?
I'm just working on some books right now and doing lots of school events and festivals, but I'm actually right behind you. I'm building a giant wig out of cling film, which is really fun. It's going to be about 5 feet high, and I'm wearing it in Bologna at the book fair to promote a new book I'm doing with Philip Reeve called Oliver and the Sea Wigs.
This looks nothing like a wig at this stage. This looks more like a voodoo doll or something.
Yeah, it's. I've actually made a smaller prototype ones that I've worn, but... Yeah, it's going to have massive curls all around. It's going to be a bit Marie Antoinette, but have like tentacles and sea life coming out of it. So that's I'm looking forward to that. I don't know if my neck can actually support it for a whole day, but we will see.
And presumably people will want to have a look at this when it comes out. You're on Twitter, you have a website.
Yeah, that's right. It's coming out with Oxford University Press in the autumn, and I'm really excited. It's at Jabberworks, actually. It's kind of like the Jabberwocky from the poem, but it's Jabberworks. And if you Google me, you'll find Sarah McIntyre, you'll find my website, jabberworks.co.uk.
Gary, what's your library quota for this year?
My library? Well, yeah, obviously I'm opening just the one library. But if anybody has any libraries they want to be opened, I'm available.
We love libraries. Libraries are getting really bad shtick these days. The government is not supporting libraries, and they're such a social hub, and they have so much opportunity to grow and become something even better. But if the government's just going to shut them all down, we're going to lose such a valuable thing. It's like... You know, the library does need to change. We need to think it's not always just about printed books. You know, people are needing all sorts of information. They need help finding information. Like, if you want to learn about London, you know, if you just Google London, you're not going to find all the stuff that a trained librarian could actually help you uncover. And you can meet people on the internet. You can meet experts. You can meet historians. But how do you find these people? So that's why we need our trained librarians and our libraries and places to go to know, you know, to find out these things.
But what is a library for then? Because we've heard plans for the police to bring their services, their front counter services into libraries. Mm. You're talking about it in terms of a sort of an information hub that goes beyond the books and the materials that people might want to borrow. Isn't there a danger, and this is often the criticism of highly computerised new libraries, that the books and the reading and the learning has actually been lost or forgotten somewhere in all of this?
I did a workshop at the local library in New Cross, which was one of the ones which the council closed down, and then it was opened by volunteers, yeah. And I did some cartoon workshops here, and I worked with one kid, and I showed him all the kind of Horrible Histories books and the Captain Underpants books, and the dad was like, popped in and said, "My God, I can't believe he's showing me these books. He's never read anything before, and he's so excited about these books. I never knew these books existed." So it's a kind of a little gateway for people who have, you know, so this dad obviously works really long hours and hasn't really got time for his kid, but it just opens these gateways because it's one of the poorest areas in London, and so they can't afford to buy books. So it is that opportunity for them to read books if they have no money, basically.
Yeah, and you see all these kind of like mums and dads who have their kid during the day when their other partner's at work, maybe, or they're single, and they need somewhere to go with their kid because they just go mad staying at home. And having that warm space, they don't have to actually buy anything. They can just go and meet other adults who have sane conversations with them, and they can, you know, explore. I've seen a toddler just go into like a children's book section and just be rummaging to find out what excites them, what grabs their eye. And you can't get that online. Yeah. You know, kids just can't explore that way, and tactile, the sort of grabbing big squares and looking at them and opening them. And they're like the same size as a kid. You know, when a picture book opens, it's like stepping into a theatre. It's so big for a kid, and it's an awesome experience.
But also, you can't do that in a bookshop because you will have to pay for it. You can't go upstate mad and get like sticky fingers all over everything if you're a tiny kid. Mm. Whereas, yeah, in the library, and there's so much more than books. There's all sorts of stuff going on. I know that the one in Crystal Palace, we've been kind of fighting to keep our library desperately. And it is a community hub. Like, people go in there for all sorts of things. And a lot of like older people just go in there to have somewhere that isn't home for them to, you know, meet up with people and have a chat. And it's lovely. But I mean, we had a meeting when I first moved to Crystal Palace. There was a meeting to try and keep the library, and that room was absolutely packed full of people who are desperate to keep that library. I think it was a little 5-year-old boy who stood up and did a speech that made everyone go aww, to you know, people who have lived in Crystal Palace their whole lives. And it just goes to show that how much people love their libraries and what an impact they make. I mean, I think we'd be devastated if the one in Crystal Palace disappeared. And I think that's the same everywhere, really.
It's been saved, though, isn't it?
Hmm. Yeah, hooray! You get to keep it.
But we had a, like, there's a Crystal Palace, Alex Milway set up the Crystal Palace Children's Book Festival, and that was partly based around a library that was kind of run on its own free... I can't remember the way it's run, the Norwood... West Norwood.
Because it's run by, I think, three councils. And one or two of the councils said, yeah, we're not putting the funding in anymore. And there's an agreement that everyone has to put this money in. So therefore, it was under threat. But so one of the other councils gave the money, put up the rest of the money. So it's been saved.
And that meant they were just able to do wild things with this festival, you know, have massive comics workshops, do whatever they wanted, really. It was incredible, the explosion of creativity that came out of it.
That's another thing, because that's South London as well, and they involved a lot of South London authors and writers and comic book artists. And it is a really thriving hub, actually, especially in this sort of Crystal Palace, New Cross area. It's wonderful, Broccoli, actually. Yeah. Broccoli as well, yeah.
Some of the areas that that feature these kind of studios, I always get the feeling that it's sort of transient. I can see that this is established, but there's always the threat looming of redevelopment in a lot of areas. Is that something that's extant here?
I don't think so. I think, well, we've got Goldsmiths just up the road, so there's like artists pouring out into the streets every 5 minutes. I think actually there's probably going to be more and more popping up. I think we had the Culture Show came and filmed something here like last year. We were kind of creeping around in the background looking not very arty at all. But yeah, I think that around here it's definitely going to just keep growing and growing. Deptford X seems to get bigger all the time. They do like open studios where you can pop in and see where people work. People come in here and look a bit horrified.
They think it's going to be this big, amazing Shoreditch kind of huge space and beautiful, and then it's like this room just full of books and knitted stuff and really small.
Ha ha ha.
But it's good because it's small, because it stays warmer.
The thing about this area in particular, like New Cross and with the Goldsmith College, a lot of the students do actually stay in the area. Once they've finished college, they actually move into the area, they live around the area. Like when Lauren was saying that, she was a bit kind of trepidatious about the area, but she's stayed in the area. I come from like East London, Romford actually. That's not even East London, but it's east of London. And I got married.
So it's China.
It's China. May as well be bloody China. Yeah. Oh, that's wrong. I said bum actually. But I'm not from the area at all. But ever since I moved here, I've never left. Even though I've got married and divorced and things, whatever, I've stayed here because there's something about South London. It's a lovely sort of warm, lovely place. But people are scared of it. My dad doesn't want to come south of the river. People don't want to come south of the river. But it's just very odd, you know. People have these preconceptions about the place, which is totally false.
But that's totally okay because that keeps the rents down. So it's horrible here. Nobody wants to come here. No, just stay away. Actually, because I came from America. I'm from Seattle originally. But I was like, I came about 13, 14 years ago. And just, I was really fascinated by the Thames and like the fact there's this Thames cycle path that you can go like all the way up to down to Greenwich, under the river, up to the North Bank, cross Tower Bridge, back home. And it's like, you almost never have to go on the road and you're just going along the cool like riverside. And there's so much history just buried in the mud even. Mm. You know, you can go down the mud, we all do it, kind of going and picking up old clay pipes and bits of...
Everybody else is shaking their heads. No, they don't know what you're talking about.
But it's just, I used to kind of, when I first got here, I didn't quite know what I was doing. I was going around and like riding my bike and just kind of trying to figure out and just communing with London really. And it was such an awesome thing. My first children's book was actually just pictures of the Thames South Bank and little characters riding along it. It's really, I love it.
This area for, in terms of like working and living is, it's lovely. When I first joined the studio, I was with Gary as his girlfriend, but I'm not anymore, but I've stayed in the studio and in this area because I love working with these guys, but also because the area is, it's a fascinating place to work in. And I wouldn't want to give it up.
No. Gary, we should say something about, well, we've already nearly plugged Teeny Tiny Saurus,
yes.
But we could do it again.
So yeah, I've got this book called Teeny Tiny Saurus.
What's it called again?
Teeny Tiny Saurus.
Okay.
And it's coming out in May, beginning of May, from Walker Books. My name's Gary Norfield. You will find me on Twitter at gnorfield and garynorfield.com.
And I can see your name there on that book. What's the name of the book?
Teeny Tiny Saurus. All one word. Put it into Google, you'll find it. And also, just to re-mention, The Phoenix is an amazing weekly children's comic. It's a very rare thing. There's not many weekly children's comics left in this country. You've got the Beano and you've got this, and plus loads of kind of... licensed rubbish, but this is like creator owned comics, all different kinds of adventures and
good ripping action going
on. It's amazing. So yeah, do check out your local independent bookshop and Waitrose for The Phoenix.
And there's some art in there by the author of Teeny Tiny Saurus.
His name is Gary Norfield.
Right. We can't keep going at that kind of pace though, Lauren. Where can people find out more about your knitting and other antics?
So my website is whodunit.com, and I'm on Twitter as Deadly Knitshade, and also Plarchy. If you want to follow your squid, follow Plarchy. Instagram, Deadly Knitshade, as well, and Facebook and everywhere else. And knitthecity.com for the graffiti knitting collective stuff.
Right, sounds like a day's entertainment just going around all the different feeds there. Finally, I know there's a blog for the Fleece Station. What's that?
We have a website, thefleecestation.co.uk, all one word, Fleece Station.
Gary Northfield, Sarah McIntyre, Lauren O'Farrell, thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
Here she stands. And that's all for this week. My thanks for this week to my guests, Lauren O'Farrell, Sarah McIntyre, and Gary Northfield. Thanks too to Bernie Barkley and Dave Haste. Theme and incidental music was by Jack Hurd and Rory Anderson. And I am N. Quentin Wolfe. By him, waiting for the river's cave, straining for the blooming waves calling from the shore. Sing
the heart.